Hello.
Hello there.
Wow,
that's
feel something. That energy.
That was a lot of energy.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's just roll right into it. Hello, okay. Welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I'm your host, Jason Napolitano, and on the line I have Mr. Chris Sheridan. Chris is actually out in Ohio today visiting his mom, and so he's on location out there. So normally he's in LA, and I'm here in Vegas. I am still here in Vegas, but he is in Ohio. So it's going well out there.
It's going great. Indoors most of the time because it's pretty darn cold outside.
I'm telling you, I am feeling the same thing here. I was outside yesterday very briefly, and I regretted every minute of it. It's freezing. It's freezing in Las Vegas, which is an odd thing to think. I mean, most people think of it, and, you know, it's normally 100 degrees all the time, but in the winter, it actually gets pretty cold here. So here we are. So today, on the show, we are going to talk about the magician, the tarot card, the magician, and kind of the archetypal symbolism of the magician figure in general. So enjoy that. We will bring you some great information. So thank you, everyone, for joining us each week. And thanks to all of our supporters out there. We appreciate it. You can check us out at anchor.fm/cosmiceye if you want to support, or you can go to cosmiceye.org. And support us through there. Chris and I both have books. Mine is If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. And Chris's is The Spirit in the Sky. So give those a look through if you have not read or purchased those yet, please. So the magician is an important figure, important symbolic card. It is the first card in the tarot after the Fool. We actually did... We did a show on the Fool archetype and the Fool tarot card. I don't remember exactly which one it was, but you can look back in the list and you can see the Fool card. And we're going to probably go through a lot of these cards as we go along. We're kind of mixing them up. We're not doing them, you know, each week or anything like that, but we are going in order. So we started with key zero, which is the Fool, and now we're going into key number one, which is the Magician or the Magus in the Toth deck, it is called. I'm actually looking at that great card right now. That's Aleister Crowley's deck. We're going to look at mostly at the AE Waite. That's the most common kind of tarot deck out there. And we're going to look at the BOTA version, which is very similar to the Waite deck. It's got some of its own little things, but that's the version of the tarot that I like quite a bit. Paul Foster Case's tarot deck. BOTA.org. You can check out their information and get that deck. Actually, the neat thing about that deck, do you have one of those, by the way, one of those BOTA decks?
No, I don't. I just have the Rider, the Crowley, and the Nap Hall okay. deck.
Yeah, the Rider is the AE Waite one that we were talking about, or that I was talking about a minute ago.
Okay.
So this BOTA deck is actually, it's you have to color it yourself. So it's black and white. And it's basically like a little, you know, tarot deck of, you know, coloring pictures. So one neat thing about that is that, you know, as you color it, you're really concentrating on that image. You're putting your own kind of touches to it. And there isn't, you know, there's colors to put on that are, you know, that are recognized by the book that you get with it, because they all have sort of symbolic properties and energies to them. And so you do want to kind of follow that guide, but it does give you sort of a different feel than just looking at a card. You know, you're actually putting something yourself into it, and you really have to concentrate down on it. It does bring your tarot game to the next level. So I do highly recommend that. As I said, you can get those on Amazon if you look up BOTA tarot, TARO deck. Those are available there. And at the BOTA.org website. That's Builders of the Aditum, which is the group that Paul Foster Case started, which is in Los Angeles. Paul Foster Case actually was one of Manly Hall's good friends. And when Chris and I were working at PRS together, there's in the library, there's actually some of Paul Foster Case's very early work. It's typed out, and he had sent it over to Manly Hall to look at it for some editing. Isn't that what it was? Those remember those documents that I found?
Yeah. And he also wrote a book. I think it was called Oracle of the Tarot.
That's
which focused on the Nap Hall.
Oh, that's right. Deck. Yeah. That, and that's,
I think it was 30 or 31, and the deck came out in 1929.
Yeah.
So it kind of immediately followed that
publication. That's right, and that's a public domain book that you can find online very, very easily. It's out there floating around. That's a neat one, especially if you like that Nap Hall deck, and that's an excellent deck. It's a little different, the attributions in it. There's a few changes. Manly Hall starts his deck at the number one, and he starts that on the Fool, so then it kind of changes the attributions of the letters. But it's, you know, there's a lot of disagreement as to what attributions go with which card. And of course, you know, some of the things we say today about the Magician, you may or may not agree with. That's the beauty of the tarot cards, though, is that there's multiple meanings, because these, again, are symbols. We talked a little bit about this in I think our last show, when we were talking about the difference between a sign and a symbol. And these, the symbols on these cards are not signs. They don't have just one meaning that you're going to figure out or memorize and then you understand the depth of it. These are symbols. So the symbol is supposed to open you up to the mystery behind the image itself. That's the real goal of a symbol. You know, so it has multiple meanings, and it'll have multiple meanings throughout your life as you continue to work with those symbols. So, you know, that's one of the cool things about these cards, is that as time goes on, you will work with them and you will find that you go deeper and deeper into them and get more and more and different meanings out of them, you know, because they mean what they mean to you at that specific time in your life. And yes, you can, you know, you can study books and so on. But I mean, the greatest really tool of learning about tarot and learning about yourself is to use these cards and to really contemplate on these cards or meditate on these cards and kind of work with the symbols themselves and how they operate within you. So, all right, so let's move into speaking a little bit about this Magician card. Actually, I want to ask you, so the first, what's the first tarot deck that you ever worked with? I know you worked with tarot when you were still in the band and stuff, when you were younger, right?
Yeah, in my 20s, in the 80s, the 1980s. I started using.
You just said the 1980s. as to not.
Yeah. Well, just to clarify
that you were not born in the 1880s. Is that correct? Okay, thank you for doing that.
I'm, you know, okay, boomer. it was the Rider-Waite deck. It was my first one. I still have that same deck. And the fun I had with it was, you know, on tour, being a different city, different state, places I had never been before, people I had never met before. And say after the bar closes and, you know, here it is 3 a.m. and a bunch of people are over at the hotel room for a party, extended after party. When I was really into this, I would do people and readings for people. And I got to the point where pretty consistently somebody would like go, "Hey, how'd you know that?" Or, "Oh, it's exactly what I was thinking." Or, you know, it seemed to resonate, or I seemed to have a knack for it or something like that, or developed one, or who knows what happens at 3 a.m. anyway.
Especially, you know, the bars are closed, and you know, especially maybe in the '80s, 3 a.m. In the '80s was a special time for all of us.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Except, but that's a whole nother podcast. So,
that may be a whole nother.
Well, you're also very good at doing I Ching readings, and you've done many of those I Ching readings for me in the past, and I appreciate that. So. What's interesting, speaking of I Ching, is that Aleister Crowley was very into the I Ching as well, and he incorporates some of the symbolism into the Toth deck. So there's some Taoist and Chinese I Ching symbolism in there as well, which is why that's such a cool deck. It's one that really, the Toth deck that he did with, I forgot what her name was, Frida Harris, I think, Lady Frida Harris, I believe was her name, that did the artwork.
She did most of the artwork here.
Beautiful, beautiful images. They're very 20s kind of, I don't even know how you describe, deco. It's a deco
it's
style.
Almost it's almost Art Deco. Yeah, style, isn't it? Yeah. It's kind of early
deco. It's really
deco.
Beautiful. I mean, just the lines and everything and the geometry in it. It's just, they're incredible cards.
And when I use that deck, I just interrupt. the pictures are so striking that I never really got too far into the booklet that comes with the deck and try to understand, well, this means that and this means everything else. I had a good background with the Rider-Waite. It's a great entry. it's a great entry deck that you can use throughout your practice. But I found that just the Crowley deck, there was so much information coming from
the images itself. Yeah.
That I just kind of went with whatever the picture, conjured up to me in the moment. Whereas I studied a little more in detail the symbolism of the Rider-Waite.
That's interesting. I think, a lot of the really, really good and fresh interpretations come out of just what you were saying, where, you may have a little bit of background in it, but you're just kind of like reacting to the symbolism on a gut level. That you see. And that's where it's like, if you pick a deck that really resonates with you, it's going to be so much easier to tap into that part of yourself. Because, one of the things about, this card, just to kind of start getting into it, this card is a card of attention. It's a card of concentration. And you can see, it's like, I'll just kind of describe the basic version of it. So, they're all a little bit different, but the most common version of it is a magician. He's a male figure and he's standing in a sort of an arbor. And there's some roses over his head. He's underneath sort of a bower of roses. There's a horizontal eight or a lemniscate, it's called. That's that infinity symbol of which you have on your wrist, if I'm not mistaken. Is it lemniscate? Is that how you pronounce that? Or is it lemniscate? I looked it up because I've heard it. People say lemniscate, like they're saying it like it's Italian or something, but I think it's from lemniscatus, which actually is a Latin word. But anyway, I think English, we say it lemniscate. It's basically a horizontal eight. It's an eight laying on its side, and it's more commonly known as an infinity symbol. That's above the magician's head. He has black hair. He's wearing a sort of a white headband, over the top of his third eye. Basically, it's at that level. The right hand is raised up, and he has a double-sided white wand. And then he's pointing down with his left finger, his left index finger, pointing down more or less to the ground. And his gesture is sort of indicating like a concentration. And then there's a table, and the table has a pentacle, a wand, a cup, and a sword on top of it. And most versions of the card will have those four things. Those of course are symbols of earth, air, fire, and water. They're also,
and they are the numbered cards.
They are the suits,
I guess, of the numbered cards.
Exactly, they're suits of the numbered cards of the small cards, which are the minor arcana. Exactly. So it kind of is setting up really these beginning cards. Well, the beautiful thing about the tarot is like it's engineered in a genius way, and it lays itself out. I mean, it's a journey of the soul, essentially. You could look at it that as one way. Dr. Stephen Heller, who used to lecture quite prominently at the PRS and is the head of the bishop of the Gnostic Church in Los Angeles, a wonderful old gentleman, a Hungarian. He talks about the tarot as being the journey of the fool. So the fool we talked about before is card number zero, and it doesn't have a place basically the layout of the deck. It's kind of like a wild card. The fool can go anywhere. So he sits on the top, and then there's three rows of seven cards underneath him. That's one way of laying out the deck. And that's a really interesting way of doing it, because essentially it's like the fool is taking this journey, or this super consciousness, in other words, is taking this journey into humanity and through these different stages of consciousness, but is ultimately coming back to itself, is the idea, in a circular pattern. And that's what that infinity symbol above the magician's head is sort of intimating. But it's also intimating that there's a higher force behind things, and he's pointing up, and gets at the Hermetic axiom as well, as below, so above, and as above, so below, that there's correspondences between the macrocosm and the microcosm, and so on. So there's a lot in this card, but so that's the basic kind of layout. Below him, he's standing in a white robe. There's red on the outside of it. There's an inside white robe. And then he has a snake around his middle portion. It's biting its own tail. The snake biting its own tail. You might, recognize that as the Ouroboros, symbol of eternity and wisdom. And then below him, he's sort of standing behind this thicket of lilies and roses. So getting back to the I'm gonna circle back. So we were talking a little bit about picking decks that you like, and picking images that resonate with you. What's interesting about this card is the red roses above. So there's five red roses above. That's the senses. It's representative of the senses, but it's also representative of desire. So it's kind of pointing out that in order to be able to focus, in order to be able to really concentrate with sort of an effortlessness, you know, we need to work with things that we desire. So it's picking sort of the right things. It's picking the right things to focus on, which, you know, it's a good, for example, a good maxim in meditation is to, you know, pick a mantra, or pick an image or a mandala that you really, you know, that resonates with you so that you can focus on it easily. And it really does help to build that concentration. That's one of the intimations of that symbolism up there. So before, you know, we start breaking down all that stuff, let's talk to you a little bit about, the magician archetype in general. So it's my understanding, and please jump in a second here, that, you know, the magician archetype is a sort of an initiatory figure. It could be a figure, like a sort of wise figure almost, but in a way that's more like Hermes or Mercury, more of a sort of a benevolent trickster figure in a way. That's another association with this card is Mercury or Hermes or Toth, that there are these wise men, but there's also like a little bit of the trickster in them. And that's why he's a magician. In the Marseille deck, you see the magician. This is an older deck from the 18th century, late the mid 1700s, I think, from France. You know that one. So
I do, and that's really kind of a foundational inspiration, I guess you could call it, for the Nap Hall deck.
Yeah, for sure. Which in that Nap Hall deck, he's called Le Batelier, which is the juggler. So in that deck and in that Marseille deck, he's more of a sort of a trickster figure, and you see that coming through. And it's interesting how, you know, in these more sort of Victorian style decks, they've made him kind of a more sort of steadfast and kind of like, you know, pious figure in a sense. And they've sort of like taken out the symbolism of the trickster, but there's a bit of the trickster at the bottom of Hermes and Toth and Mercury, you know? So that's something that's interesting. So speaking archetypally, so oftentimes wisdom will sort of slide in through these strange ways, or through these weird coincidences, or through something that, you know, is ridiculous or odd or strange, you know, that might find its way into your life. And that's an interesting thing. So you want to talk more about the magician as an archetypal figure, maybe with movies or whatever that comes to mind? I mean, just in general.
Well, you can think of Merlin being a mentor, somebody who knows some secrets. Talk about hermeticism or Hermes, so something hermetically sealed. Some of this knowledge is invisible. And in a modern sense, you could almost look at a magician as like a scientist, somebody who's dealing with these forces of nature. And it seems like it could be trickery or witchcraft or something, maybe something a scientist would do every day of the week. Now might be, wow, they're incredible, 100 years ago or something. So it's uncovering and using these forces of nature, and it's very in the present, and it's very active, that you're the one doing the thing. There's that element of knowledge, that you have the knowledge with which to use these elements, these implements, these tools of the trade. And of course, the mentor capacity, but knowing some secrets and kind of knowing the secrets of nature and being able to work with them and see beyond the veil of maybe the surface to get to some of the elemental or, you know, essences behind, you know, gravity or, you know, physics or, you know, fire and all these forces that are dealt with. And there's usually, like you're talking about the roses, you know, referring to this desire, or of course, rose, R-O-S-E, is an anagram for eros, where we get, erotic and love, that type of love from. And so there's a purpose, and there's a power. So, you know, Merlin, very powerful. Speaking
of that, Eros, by the way, so Eros was the son of Venus, of Aphrodite, Venus. And the rose is also sacred to Venus as well. So, yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay. So there's a powerful nature to the magician. And a lot of times I've seen in tarot descriptions of the magician, sometimes that's in some way represents either the tarot mm-hmm. reader or the querent, the person asking the question. In that sense, they are in a way the magician, because we're, you know, going to use these tarot cards to come up with some answer to a question or a guidance, you know, for an issue or something mm-hmm. like that. So it's really kind of at that point of power, and it reminds us that maybe in our own natures that we have, or maybe more powerful than we realize.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean that really in a good mm-hmm. sense. So in a sense, we are all the magician if we're going to do a tarot spread or just, you know, work with what's in our lives, the people and places we go and the things we do. We are our own magicians. We need to take everything, you know, with stuff in the kitchen or something with a family member. And you want to make something better. You want to make something stronger. You want to make something new or fresh or interesting. And that's a magic power that we all have when we understand better our true yeah. natures and how we can use our minds as well as our hands and feet to do things in this world.
Yeah. Good point. Good point. Very, very nice. Nicely put. You know, one of the things too, that's interesting about this, like you're saying, that we are the magician. That is something that's one of the big messages of this card in general. And it's, you know, it's really showing you how to be able to operate and how to manifest things and how to be able to live a life, you know, how to live your life. And one of the attributions of this card that goes along with that sort of Hebrew letter that it's attached to, at least in the BOTA version. And this is true of most of the Western mystery traditions. They do follow pretty closely to these attributions. So the Fool is attributed to the letter Aleph, which is equivalent to A in English. The Magician is Bet, which is more or less B. And B is known as a double letter. It has two pronunciations in Hebrew. So it has an attribution of what's known as life and death. And also it's attributed to what's called the transparent intelligence. So transparent intelligence, in essence, is this idea that there's, you know, you think of transparency, it's light going through something. So if you notice, the magician is pointing upwards with that wand, you know, he's holding it up to the heights. And it's kind of indicating that there's a higher source that's flowing down through that magician. And that's, you know, indicative of that higher source that's within ourselves flowing, you know, into and through us that we're dependent on. You know, and that's where we're drawing the source of our power. It doesn't come, it is within us, but, you know, it doesn't come from us. You know, we're not creating it. And we've talked about that a lot on the show in terms of, you know, sort of the material idea that, oh, the body is creating the, you know, the energies that exist within it and so on. And that is one way of looking at it. But I prefer to, and I think you do as well, to look at the body as sort of a receptacle for the soul, for the consciousness, for the energy, or in other words, like a sort of, you know, a temporary holding pattern for that, you know, big consciousness that's, you know, that's within us, the sort of eternal consciousness that, you know, that does live on after the mortal body passes away. So that's an indication that, you know, there's a sort of, you know, in this card that there's something working through us, and that if we can concentrate that energy, you know, we can manifest the things we want. We can create a life that we want and so forth, you know, not just to bring it into sort of a materialistic sort of thing, but, you know, help healings and, you know, bring joy and positivity and love and help into the world and so on. And all that is being kind of manifested manifested through one. And then he's pointing both to the ground, which I think is saying, you know, we're bringing that sort of energy down into this material world in a way through ourselves. But also he's pointing at that table of attention that's in front of him. And it holds those four implements. And, you know, most of us know, obviously, that they stand for earth, air, fire, and water. But also the wand is attributed to will. The cup is imagination, in essence. The sword is a sort of a thinking capacity or action, thinking slash action. And then the pentacle is the actual physical manifestation of things. That's one way of looking at it. So you would look at those sort of four steps and sort of how, you know, and looking at how the world manifests and how we manifest things in the world. Those, of course, also are analogous to the four worlds in Kabbalah. It's four levels of creation in Kabbalah. So all of this stuff comes together. There's so much symbolism in these cards. It's amazing. And this, you know, is just one of them, obviously, one of 78. So another meaning, as I said, of this is the letter bet. Bet is house. That's another. So all of these in the ancient Hebrew, all these letters have a sort of hieroglyphic meaning along with the sound quality to them. And then there's a number associated with it as well. So this letter bet is associated with a house. That's another indication that we're looking at, you know, that we as the magician are sort of a house of God, you know, a house of the spirit, you know, and they talk about that house made without hands, eternal in the heavens, that's in the Bible. And that's this sort of, you know, this eternal consciousness that you know, is temporarily housed in this body. So there's a lot of interesting symbolism in that way as well. So communication, reason, intellect, mental functions, awareness, skill, words, speaking, writing, articulation, magic, etc., all attributed to Mercury and Hermes and Thoth, who are associated with this particular card. So those are interesting things. This is card number one, key number one in the tarot deck after the Fool. So it's the first sort of point of focus, really, whereas the Fool represents a sort of super consciousness. It represents, you know, kind of undifferentiated consciousness. This represents self-consciousness, which is another reason why it's attributed to focus or concentration. It's the sort of egoic sort of way of looking at things, the I am I sort of mentality, you know, our feeling of individuality that we get, and so forth. Do you want to share a little bit about anything that's on that you're thinking of right now?
Well, just continuing with what you've already mentioned, the table mm-hmm. itself, a four-legged, four sides to the table, and you know the number four meaning material existence, yeah. Manifestation. Yeah, yeah. So you know that symbol gets played again. And as maybe an aside or not, the four implements, the four tools on the table relate to like an everyday playing card deck, where the pentacle would be the diamond, the cup would be the heart, the wand would be the club, and the sword would be the spade. And it's one way the tarot symbolism was able to kind of survive. Yeah. In a kind of innocuous way. Exactly. And then you have playing cards. They don't relate 100%, but there's, you know, definitely a connection.
Yeah, for there. Sure.
And they're all there. All the tools are there. It's laid out on the table. And one thing that, you know, really gets me because of the way the image, and this is kind of the same and almost no matter what deck, it really is consistent. You know, the pointing, holding mm-hmm. the wand up to the sky and then the pointing down to the yeah. ground. And it's also a reminder that the magician, that is us, we stand in the middle ground, or twixt heaven and hell, as William Blake mm-hmm. might say, that, you know, we have the heaven above and the earth below. Yeah. And what lies in it? So this is like the master of two worlds.
Yeah.
You know, the above spirit, maybe invisible, and the lower material, visible a tangible world. And when we live in both, we are a spirit and a matter type being. Mm-hmm. And even the infinity symbol over the head it's just kind of floating, free floating in space in the Rider-Waite deck. In the Thoth deck, it's kind of an intertwined snake above his head that makes that figure, you know, moving into the Caduceus. And in the Nap Hall deck, it's a hat. He's wearing a hat that the brim of the hat, if you kind of just look at it and half squint your eye, you go, yeah. Oh my gosh, it's actually making that shape. So it's there. And with that infinity symbol, you know, or the eight, the figure eight, it's the point in between where they crisscross mm-hmm. over each other. That's the point of focus. That's in the center of the head of this magician. And that's where he and likewise we stand in between these two worlds, the heaven, the earth, the spirit, the yeah. matter. And that's the point of contact. And it's also the smallest point because you have this big kind of bulbous, mm-hmm. you know, rounded yeah, part. Yeah. Of on each side, and when it comes together, and it also crisscrosses, it moves into the other side, and then it moves back yeah. again. So it's this interplay. You can't just—it's not a static thing. It's a very moving. It is a figure eight, like a skater. You're really kind of drawing this constantly. That this energy flow is moving between these two worlds, and that's where the magician has the focus of power, because you're drawing from both. And all this flower symbolism, you know, that's very earthy. Mm-hmm. That's stuff from the ground. It's growing and it's alive and it's brought into matter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, our self-consciousness, you know, and our sort of ego consciousness is very connected to the body and day-to-day existence. And it's what, you know, allows us obviously to navigate through the world. And I like that point that you're making. I think, you know, if we see the earth maybe, or the, you know, the ego consciousness or self-consciousness that this magician represents as being that point of contact between like the higher and the lower. In essence, I mean, if you want to look at it psychologically, maybe between, you know, super consciousness and the self with a capital S up there, you know, just for lack of a better word, up there. And then down below us, the unconsciousness or the underworld down there, and then us kind of in between, and that self-conscious state of mind, that ego state of mind, sort of the mediator between those two things, and the, you know, and the sort of conduit between those two different states of mind as well. So I love that that description you gave, that small point between that, you know, between those two loops, and that eight on its side, and that being the self-conscious, but then it's connected and it's between and balanced between those two things, you know, infinitely. And, you know, that's where our own self-conscious work, our own ego sort of work, we have to be directed by desire to do things. You know, sometimes in the, you know, in the East, it's, you know, we think of the idea of, you know, kind of eradicating desire, things like that in yoga philosophy and so on. But even they say, you know, you can eradicate desire, but you've still got to have a desire for to be able to do that work. You have to be attracted to the work, to do the yoga, to do the meditation. You've got to have a drive or a desire for liberation to achieve it. So it's paradoxical as well. You know, you have to.
And that word desire, at least in a Buddhist context, sometimes people have trouble early on when studying Buddhism that, desire mm-hmm. is the cause of all the ills and yeah. suffering. And, you know, the way out of suffering is to remove this mm-hmm. desire. It's depending on the translation, how you want to look at it. It's really the clinging. It's the attachment yeah, to grasping. The desire. You can have a desire, but yeah, the grasping, yeah. But it's with an open hand.
Yeah. Well, that
not a clenched exactly. fist or something trying to grip something. It's, you could have a desire, but it has to be like a loose garment. Yeah. It has to allow itself to be what it is.
No, exactly.
And not be too attached. If, you know, even if you have something, it's holding on to it with mm-hmm. dear life. Or if you don't have something, it's reaching and grasping, trying to get it.
Desperately. That's where the trouble. Grab at something or grasp at something or hang on to something that is impossible to hold on to. And I think, Yeah, people do get the wrong idea. They think Buddhism is so pessimistic because it's, you know, it's saying, well, you can't have any desires and you know, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. And it's like negating all these things. But what it's talking about is the extremes of those things, you know. And yes, some monks do, you know, give up all their possessions and, you know, live an ascetic life and so on. But that's not, you know, the average lay person doesn't understand it as that. And, you know, it's the symbolic idea of grasping and desire as a sort of as a drive that makes one, you know, crazy in essence, because you're chasing after things that, you know, you can't hold on to. And that's the sort of idea that all this is change and all this is an infinite thing. And I think that's what that infinity, that lemniscate symbol is getting at too, that there's this, you know, there's a sort of infinite cycle of motion and change as well in everything that we do. So getting back a little bit to this concentration though, you know, one of the ways that we can really, you know, live a more comfortable life and live a sort of more peaceful life is to be able to build this concentration. And this card is a good way to do that, to use this card and actually sort of contemplate and, you know, look at this card on a daily basis and sort of use it for a meditation purpose. And it opens up these things within ourselves. It helps us to concentrate. You know, that's the nature of these symbols. They affect us on a level below consciousness. They get in, you know, the unconscious mind is a symbol-driven sort of entity. And, you know, it works in symbols. It teaches in symbols and in symbols and dreams and in visions and in, you know, in artwork and so on. So one of the ways to speak to it, one of the more effective ways to speak to it is through symbols. So we use mandalas or different religious symbols or spiritual symbols or, you know, tarot cards or artwork or so on to, you know, to affect different parts of the mind and awaken different sort of latent capacities that might be within us. You know, something that's sort of asleep that needs to be woken up. You know, we all have the ability to concentrate naturally and to focus on things, and we can do it. You know, I talk about that in my book, and, you know, we've talked about that before, you know, because you can worry, you know, you can worry. You can obviously focus on things. You can obsess on things. You know, we've all done it, and it seems quite effortless when you're focused on something that, you know, you're upset about to keep thinking about it over and over and over again. What happens is, though, we've got to train ourselves a little bit away from that so that we can do that constructively. And this card is kind of a tool to be able to do that. You know, and that's what it's saying about desire. So you've got to keep your mind on the things that you desire and the things that you want in your life to unfold and off of those things that you don't. So you just take that attention and kind of shift it. It's almost like taking a, you know, there's a little stream. You kind of redirect that stream towards a different end, you know. So you put a few rocks in it and, you know, kind of divert it. It doesn't take that much effort. So, you know, that's one of the things is taking this concentration that you're already doing and sort of diverting it to things that are more constructive. And like I said, one of the ways of doing that is through these images or symbols, through affirmations. Affirmations can help as well. But symbols are a super powerful way to get to the unconscious, because as I said, you know, that's how the unconscious speaks. Think about a dream. It speaks to you in dream language and dream symbolism. And, you know, it oftentimes doesn't seem to make any sense until you really work with those images, right? You know, you have some crazy dream and you're like, what the heck does this mean? But then, you know, you write it down and you work with it and you're like, okay, this is a part of myself and this is something that I'm not seeing about myself and something I need to adjust. And you know what I mean? So it, over time, it mm-hmm. takes on meaning, doesn't it?
Well, and you can't make a literal interpretation exactly. Or translation of a lot of these symbolic.
Well, they're things. Mysterious, right?
Yes. And it's what they point to. It's what they're like. It's what they remind you of or what they conjure mm-hmm. up and how they kind of fit together. But I like what you're saying about a point of concentration, because, you know, I guess if you're going to, and there's a reason why this, usually the magician card is almost this one from the Rider Waite deck, it's almost the ubiquitous or generic, this is what a tarot card yeah. is, or yeah. somebody says tarot, or it's on the cover of the deck box or sure. something, because it embodies all four of the lower arcana cards. And it really sums up a lot of things. You know, put yourself in the magician's shoes and then let these images move through you. And like you're saying about directing your life and the things around you and within you, those tools as well. In this card, you see all these tools lying on the table. He's not brandishing them. He's not drinking out of the cup. He's not wielding the sword or throwing the pentacle or anything. He's really focused between heaven and earth with the arm motions. And these are laid out in front of him. So to me, again, there's infinite interpretations and very deeply personal ones, which I would recommend anybody and everybody do. Yes, listen to us, read a book, read the booklet that comes with your deck. But really, you're the magician, and what does it mean to you?
And for sure.
One of the things it brings up to me is that he's using this knowledge and there's the white purity, and there's desire, and there's reaching, you know, the wand, the magic wand, I guess, not the wand of the club's wand, but the one in his hand, and down towards the earth, and that's really a good place to begin. Yeah. It's centered. It's balanced. It's of the earth, earthy, and it's of the heavens, spirit.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're in between, and that's a great place to start before you start tinkering with these tools, the cup and the sword and the wand and the pentacle. That's sometimes what I do. If I look at this card, I go, wait a minute, before I start tinkering, let me make sure I'm centered. Where am I? Am I in this place?
Yeah.
Am I balanced? Am I using heaven and earth? Am I really kind of out of my ego sense of, you know, what happened to me this morning, or what I'm worried about tomorrow, and things like that? No, I'm in this place. And the white, you know, for purification, that's a good way to kind of clean the slate.
Yeah.
So my mind and my emotions, I'm not bringing this turmoil if I have it.
That's a great point.
Even if I'm not aware of it. So there's kind of a cleansing, and that's with alchemy, that's one of the first things, you know, you do. The alchemist will clean the slate, you know, you'll clear the palate, so to speak.
Yeah, look at how he's doing it.
Before you start
look
doing
at how
something.
He's doing it, too. I think that's a great point you bring up, that there's two wands. He's holding one wand, and then there's a wand on the table for the, you know, the sort of field of attention, or the sort of material world existence, right? The one that's, you know, that he's holding in his hand is pointing up to heaven. And it's, you know, I think what it's saying is, you know, manifest the higher, you know, manifest the higher sort of purposes down into this, and make sure you're sort of clearing away to be that transparent energy so that spirit can flow through you, so that the, you know, the manifestations and the work that you do magically or meditationally speaking, or, you know, in your life, you know, in your business or whatever you're trying to kind of manifest, create, do, be, whatever, is actually done, you know, with a higher self in mind. So it's not just your ego and your desires and, you know, but you're thinking about for the higher good. By the higher good, you know, we're talking about something bigger than ourselves, right? That we're doing something for the earth, for other people, for, you know, the greater spiritual good in general, what have you, right? And you're becoming a conduit or a channel for that before you do, you know, your magical work or your operations or your manifestations in your life, so that you can clear that space to make sure that you're manifesting the right things. Cause that, you know, like I said, another meaning of this letter bet is life and death. And it's indicating the fact that, you know, what you manifest and what you, you know, it's what you talk about, what you think about, what you create, what you concentrate on can either bring life or death. I mean, that's one of the things about being a human being, that we have a great amount of power. And just think about some of the things we've created, massive amounts of destructive, you know, weapons that we've created. And then the vast amount of beautiful, you know, spiritual, artistic, you know, uplifting endeavors that we've created as well. So it's like, it can be a mixed bag. So unless you try to connect to that higher part of yourself and that transpersonal higher energy, that God energy, spirit energy, you know, you're not maybe moving in the right direction if you're, you know, based out of the ego. And I think that's an indication. That was a great, great point you made. And the fact that there's two wands on most of these magician cards in most of these decks, you know, I think is a pretty clear indication that, you know, you've got to, even on the Toth deck, it's like that, except his wand that he's on is like coming up through his spine. He's literally on the wand itself, which is interesting. But then there's a free floating wand out there as well, in the background. So, you know, most of these decks do have that symbolism. They're saying, you know, connect the higher and the lower before you start messing around in the world of manifestation and the world of works, in essence. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Nice. Well,
thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So, let me think. I think that may be about it. We might call it a
One thing I might add with, well, you talked about the red roses there, and you did mention initially that there are the white lilies.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't talk about
that. Pretty sure they're lilies.
They are lilies. They
very much look like that. And there is a biblical from the New Testament. It's in Luke, and I think it's in one of the other ones, too. And it goes, consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not. And yet I say unto you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. So to unpack that a little bit, the context is he's talking to the disciples about how we have what we need and we shouldn't really worry too much about tomorrow or how we're going to get fed or clothed or things like that. He makes an earlier comment about a raven who always has enough to eat, doesn't have to store things up, and that these lilies, just as they are more beautiful than what, you know, covering the ground, are more beautiful than Solomon, being relating to, you know, the rich king, you know, that has everything. You know, it could adorn himself with any kind of, you know, bejeweled garment or something like that. And we also use that term, gild a lily, like there's no point in gold plating something that's already perfect as it is, but there's sort of an effortlessness to it as well. They toil not, they spin not. And spin means like a spinning wheel, to make thread, to make a garment, because that's the analogy is being used. And so maybe that's something also to think about too, that, you know, nature grows these things, that there is, you know, it's bringing in this natural growth and development and unfoldment, energy and capacity as well, instead of like brute forcing, trying to change and wrest and wrestle with something. And sometimes you do need to do that. It takes a strong hand. But there is this effortless, that it's growing naturally without toil or
sweat.
Wow,
fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you for adding that. The other thing that's interesting about that lily is it's six-sided. And so if you look at it sort of on the top, it looks like it's sort of two interlocking triangles. Like it's like almost like a Star of David. And it's a representative form of that sort of the higher and lower meeting together as well. You know, fire and water coming together, that meeting point between those two natures and so on. So, you know, that again is another sort of representative of the idea of sort of the infinite within us, you know, the infinite in the material, in the material existence. And so that I think is kind of the greatest thing of, you know, of all to take away from this card is what we said earlier, and you really brought this up first, was the idea that we are the magician. You know, this card is a part of ourselves. It's the fundamental part of ourselves, really. You know, it's pointing at our individuality, but also its reliance on the transpersonal, on the spiritual world, and keeping that in mind and you know, focusing that down and having faith that stuff is unfolding in your life as it should, like you just spoke about, you know, and not worrying so much about it. So, yeah, if you want to manifest something or you have certain needs or you need a healing or you need some financial help or so on, you know, you ask for those things and manifest them and intend them, and then let go of the result. You know, allow it to unfold and know that there is a higher source that is behind all of this. You know, and have faith. That's part of the idea of having faith, right? So, and realizing also that, you know, within yourself, you know, another, just real quick aside, but the, you know, the rose also is a symbol of that Christ consciousness, that consciousness within that Jesus talked about. I and the Father are one. And so, you know, the idea of the Rosicrucian, the Rose Cross, that's another thing. Mm-hmm. So that's that spirit within, that transpersonal God spirit that's within all of us and within everything. You know, within that house, that letter bet, that house, inside of that house is that spirit. And that's where we live.
And there's a completeness to it that, you know, everything is that you would ever need, that the magician would ever need, is there. The tools are on the table, heaven above, earth below.
It's all there.
The flowers, though. Yeah. So it's a reminder, too, that as we go about our own magic selves, being a magician in our own lives, that we have everything's there. We have what we need. Now we need to do it yourself, though. And we're partially DIY. There are things we have to do. But there's no notion of lack, or that if I only had this, I could become that. Same thing with alchemy. It's transmutation. It's transformation. The gold is within the lead. That's what the alchemical process does. It draws it out. It refines it. It does away with some things and burns and twists and turns, you know, all the operations that an alchemist would do, or the steps that a magician might take and make to conjure up something or make magic happen. But it's from a starting point of completeness. And I think that's something that throws a lot of us sometimes is, you know, there's this lack or this feeling of incompleteness that I don't have enough, or I'm not enough, or if I only had this, well, then I could do that. It's a reminder that even if it might not be in front of you visibly, or it may not show up as numbers in your bank account the way you'd prefer, the capacity to do that, to make that, to have that work in your life is within you. And, you know, you will use earth forces and spirit forces, but those are within you too.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
We have that.
Exactly.
There's nothing lacking in this magician art.
No, that is very, very important to get your head around, and a very succinctly and well-put statement. One last thing just to think about it. So it popped into my head as you were saying that. Wayne Dyer, may he rest in peace, used to say, you already are all that you need. You already are all that you need. And, you know, so often we go around thinking, if I just do this, if I can just fix that, if I can just, you know, have this in my life or that in my life, or fix this bad habit, you know, then I'll be happy, or then I'll be joyful, or then I can manifest the life that I want. But you already are all that you need, you know, and the magician is really saying that. He's saying, look, your heaven is on here on earth, but it's also, or excuse me, your home is here on earth, but it's also in heaven, and it's also in the, you know, sort of underworld, or, you know, unconscious world at the same time, from which all of this, you know, springs. And it's all an interrelated reality. You know, it's all an interrelated reality. And we're that sort of magician in between those, you know, the upper and the lower, that is able to navigate through this. And that's our unique human life. So keep that in mind, meditate on this card. I actually did, years ago, I think about 10 years ago, I think it's still up on YouTube. I did a tarot meditation video, which is pretty helpful. If you want to meditate on these cards, that is actually the next book I'm working on as well. But you know, in the meantime, do check out this video. I'll put a link up in the anchor description for that. You know, so you can use these cards to meditate on. They're really, really a valuable tool. Like I said, like a mandala that you can use. Any parting words? Your last parting words are great, but anything else that popped in your mind?
Just be the magician and make magic happen in your life. You're connected to large forces. You're more powerful, more knowledgeable than you know more than you know that you know or think that you know, and let these forces and these archetypal images or mythological tales or whatever you're connecting with, let them work through you. If you're connected to them, if you are attracted to them, there are hundreds of tarot decks. Yep. There, people are making new ones all yeah. the time, modern, some that have technological mm-hmm. symbols yeah. in them. And a lot of them are actually made by people like you and I. I mean, they are, that have, you know, maybe studied this more than I have, but they're kind of homemade or individually constructed. So search Etsy
yeah.
or
yeah, for
you
sure. know,
wherever you can find tarot cards. And new ones are being made all the time that have different kinds of imagery, and they can all work, and they can all work in the same yeah. way. But one person might like this
yeah,
deck,
exactly.
and one person might like that deck, and you know, or get a couple.
I would say
and
that's
work
a fantastic
with them.
Idea. Go with what resonates with you. Also, it's good to maybe use a basic starter type deck like that, you know, Rider-Waite deck. Or the BOTA deck, because that standardized imagery kind of gives you a sort of place to start from. And then you can see how people have developed out different decks, because that's kind of the, you know, they're kind of in a way the gold standard. It was the first really widely accepted sort of esoteric style deck. It's not a completely esoteric deck. I mean, it has some hidden things in it and so on, but it has the basics, and it was the first one that did that, you know, in the early 1900s. So a lot of the modern decks, at least, you know, take a lot of their sort of, you know, initial ideas from that deck. So it's nice to have that as a reference, like an encyclopedia or something. You can go back and look and see how it compares with that Rider-Waite or that BOTA deck, which is very similar, you know, or that Marseille deck. Marseille. So those are some ideas. Check out Paul Foster Case's The Tarot. That's an excellent book. Meditations on the Tarot, which is by an anonymous author. A Journey into Christian Hermeticism is a fantastic book. Manly Hall's work in The Secret Teachings on the Tarot is really great. He has that little pamphlet on tarot as well. Is that just called The Tarot, or what is the name of that one?
It's called
The Tarot, Manly Hall.
Yeah, and the imagery is his
Nap-Hall deck.
And
that is a fantastic deck. I love that deck. They did a reprint of it fairly recently, and we both got copies of that. You have one of the old ones, though, don't you? One of the original ones?
No, but I've seen them and held them. They're pretty interesting. They're very hard to find from 1929. Cool. Now, there was a reprint in the 80s. Early 80s by US Games, I think, was the company that put it out. Those are actually hard to find.
But the latest,
because it was
the latest one is up on Amazon, though, and it's Amazon Prime, isn't it? You can get it.
It's like $35. It's actually a pretty reasonable price for a tarot deck.
It's not too bad. But it used to be super hard to find. And it was like, you know, several hundred dollars if you could even find one. So it's nice that they have that mm-hmm. available now. So those are all some sources, and there are obviously many others. Too many to get into, but we're going to continue to cover the tarot intermittently as we're speaking. And, you know, this one of course was on the magician, and, you know, let us know what you think. If you like these tarot episodes, we'd like to hear back from you or different ideas that you have for shows that you'd like to hear us do, you know, topics that you'd like to investigate with us. Let us know, please. Thank you for your support. Again, I'm Jason Napolitano. My book is If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. And you are who?
Chris Sheridan, and my book is The Spirit in the Sky. It's a memoir about a spiritual experience I had in a plane crash in between the time I called Mayday on the radio. Yes, I was a pilot, and when I crunched down on the ground.
Fantastic. So, and that is
so there's that.
So there's that. And that is available on your website, and you have a link to Amazon through there, chrissheridan.com. You can find mine on cosmiceye.org. And actually, again, I need to remember to do this. I need to put your book up on Cosmic Eye, a link to that. And so you can support us at anchor.fm/Cosmic Eye. And please, if you like the show, tell your friends about us, put us up on social media, share, you know, do whatever you can to help us get the word out about the ancient wisdom, the esoteric subjects, psychology, etc. You know, we're trying to make the world a little better place in our small way. And if you can help us, we would greatly appreciate it, because we know you care about this stuff as we do, or you would not be listening. So, you know, the spirits have seen fit to put us together. So let's work together and try to get some of this great stuff out there. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week. We're here every, we have a new episode every Monday. We record these on Sunday. And we appreciate you listening. Thanks a lot. Have a great week and God bless.